Welcome back to No Time for Neutral. I'm your host, Georgia Hawthorne.
And I'm Andy.
And we've got a whole laundry list of things to get through for you guys today. And number one on the list is, at like 6 a.m. this morning, Donald Trump went on Truth Social, seemingly unprovoked, and was like, I'm going to eliminate mail-in ballots and voting machines. That was also in there. So I'm not really sure what that plan is, but my focus here is getting rid of mail voting. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely nothing wrong with mail-in voting. Yeah. You are statistically more likely to get struck by lightning than have a fraudulent case of mail-in voting. I've never been struck by lightning. Have you?
No.
Okay.
Don't plan to.
Then I feel like we're probably pretty safe. But when it comes to Montana and mail-in voting, 68% of Montanans voted by mail in 2024.
Right.
That number was probably higher in 2020, but a lot of that was because of the pandemic. So 2020 numbers when it comes to mail-in can be a little skewed.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but we've been a mail-in ballot state for many of our elections for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our school board races are all mail.
Yeah.
You can't even go in person.
The upcoming city council municipal primary in Missoula, I know, is mail in.
All mail.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand, if it's easy and it's convenient, why would we get rid of it?
See, I think Trump is still whining about losing the 2020 election. You mentioned the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge mail-in ballot
election
because of the pandemic. And Trump lost by over 7 million ballots.
Yep.
And, you know, many of those were mail-in. I think there's stats that do show that early votes and due to that mail-in votes tend to lean Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Trump is pissed that, you know, Democrats tend to vote this way more. But that's not always the case, because you think of our state, Montana, which, you know, is currently leaning red.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always, well, not always, but I think in the majority of our lifetimes have been a mail-in ballot state, or at least have had that option for
voting. I always vote by mail.
Me too.
I have no reason, like, I don't need an absentee ballot, but I am infinitely more likely to fill out my ballot and turn it back on time.
Yeah.
Because I can just do it and throw it in the mail and never think about it again.
As working age people, it is so much easier for us to vote that way. I have voted in a voting booth, but it's been years, like, over a decade.
I just, why? Why would you, like, you stand in line, there's tons and tons and tons of people, and it's stressful, and like you're under pressure because you're in this booth, and you don't have any of that kind of pressure when you get to do it from your own kitchen table.
I think the majority, and I could be wrong, but I think the majority of people that do vote day of at the elections tend to be more traditionalist. They just like the kind of
the vibe
of going in person.
Right.
Going in a booth, if that's what they have, talking to the nice little old ladies at the check-in counter, that type of thing. So I get it as a traditionalist, but, I mean, we're just so used to voting by mail and the convenience of voting by mail. And we all want everybody to vote, right? So
we don't include the president in that.
I guess I won't include the president. But in my mind, the more voters, the better. And so if that makes it easier for most people to vote and vote early, that's great.
Right. And I mean, that's why we see these consistently high mail turnout numbers in Montana.
Yeah.
60% of Montanans consistently vote by mail. Like, that's the average you'll see in any given election. 25 minutes, if not more, one way.
Right.
To get to a polling place.
Right.
That's crazy. Like, it's not even just, I don't want to deal with the traffic, there's a lot of people. Like, that is a full-blown hour of your day spent just driving to go vote. And that's not realistic for most folks.
Yeah. In an incredibly rural state like Montana, mail-in ballots are good for the people that live here. think about tribal nations in particular, they tend to be very rural. And, like, I believe it's required that each tribal nation has a voting precinct, but the Republicans have done everything in their power to eliminate those.
Right.
Therefore, if that's the case, Native Americans have to drive miles and miles off the reservations.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with other parts of rural communities. So, yeah, that's their shtick. Republicans are trying to...
really, really is. And it's been their shtick for a long time.
Yeah.
It's kind of started in, like, the early 2000s, was when Republicans first started shifting into this voter suppression kind of mentality. And that's right around the time that the, like, information broke that eventually, at some point, white people would no longer be the majority in America. And the Republican saw this, and given that they had entirely built their base around white Christians, they were like, oh, that doesn't look good for us. And the normal, like, pro-democratic answer to that is to change your strategy. And be like, okay, how can we appeal to these other demographic groups in our country? That's the correct answer.
Yeah.
The Republicans chose to just shrink the electorate.
Sure. So their strategy now becomes, don't let the other people vote. Figure out however we can to stop them from voting. And they just don't have a voice.
Right. And that's why voter suppression efforts so heavily target Native communities, people of color, because that is the demographic that is a threat to them politically. And so by shrinking the electorate, less people vote. That's the whole concept. And if less people vote, they win. So if Republicans were actually successful in getting rid of mail-in voting, it would be catastrophic to our democracy, to the electoral process. Like, the quality of free and fair elections would decline severely.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I don't think this is anything less than an attempt to rig 26, like, right in front of us.
Totally.
If they're able to cancel mail-in ballots before 26 even really begins, no one stands a chance. And that's the whole, that's his whole point.
Mm-hmm.
They are ripping this democracy apart, piece by piece, to keep a man with 37 felonies who's behaving like a dictator in power. And I don't think there's an excuse for that.
No. And it's evident with what we've seen in Texas, with their attempt to redistrict the state.
Yeah. So we're going to recap the entire Texas-California redistricting debacle. So last week, Gavin Newsom officially announced his ballot initiative to gerrymander California in response to Texas gerrymandering their own maps.
So let me get this straight. California is also going to redistrict the state, but this is purely in response to the bullshittery that Texas is doing because Trump is making them.
Bingo. So what happened is Trump called Texas Governor Greg Abbott up and he said, find me five more seats. That's the quote.
Crazy.
Find me five more seats in the state of Texas. Governor Abbott said, yes, sir, of course, and immediately put Texas into a special session. It should be noted that this special session was called just after Texas was absolutely devastated by flooding.
Yeah.
So he could have called a special session to, I don't know, deliver some flood relief to folks. No. No, President Trump said we gotta find five more seats, so we gotta go find five more seats.
They're gonna gerrymander the maps.
Yes.
As a way they can potentially get
right
more Republican votes next election.
Yes. And so, Texas Democrats, flood the state. Because you can't conduct business in the legislature.
And that's in their constitution, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they flee the state, and they keep using that terminology, flee the state.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting. So they went to Illinois.
Yep.
To basically
break quorum is right. the technical term.
Right. And this is something they've done in the past.
Yeah, they did this a while ago. And I'm not even sure over what. But it's happened before, so this is not out of the ordinary for Texas. Yes, they fled the state to Illinois to break quorum, which means the Texas legislature cannot conduct business, which means pass laws or do anything,
right.
without a quorum, which is two-thirds of the body.
Right.
So two-thirds of legislators have to be in the room
right.
to get anything done. And so Texas Democrats said, peace out. You're not doing this on our watch. See you in 30 days. Mm-hmm. And they fled the state. They left their homes. They left their families. They left their jobs
yeah.
for 30 days under arrest warrant, under death threats, under bomb threats, after the president said he was going to sick the FBI after them.
Yeah. So let's make this clear. By fleeing the state, these Texas Democrats are fighting like hell for what's yes. right.
yes. And so, one, Texas Democrats are freaking heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be maybe a little bit of a hot take, because there's lots of people who are really upset that they went back. Texas Democrats went back to Texas. That was always going to happen.
Yeah.
They were never going to be able to just leave Texas forever, because then eventually they just wouldn't be a legislator anymore.
Yeah.
They had to go back at some point. But what they accomplished by leaving was that they broke through all of the national media.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that most people are at least semi-aware that something is happening, either in California or Texas. And because they were able to capture the public's attention by fleeing the state, they allowed Gavin Newsom, as the leader of a strong blue state, to step up and fill that gap.
Right.
Because he is much more equipped, and the state of California is much more equipped to take this fight to the Trump administration than a minority of Texas Democrats in their legislature.
Sure.
So, Gavin Newsom is asking his voters for permission, and that's the major difference here,
mm-hmm.
to redistrict California, to tighten up some swing seats into safe seats, and to turn some swing seats into lane seats, and basically secure 5 more Democratic seats in the state of California to wash out the 5 new seats in Texas. And I think the importance of Newsom doing it through a ballot initiative is that it shows he is still committed to this. He's still committed to our democracy, and he's still willing to play by the rules of the game, even if we have to twist them a little bit right now. Because if California voters say no, it won't happen. But if they say yes, we can actually punch back.
I think it's bold. And this is Gavin Newsom saying, like, we're not mm-hmm. going to take this shit. We're going to fight back.
Right.
You know, would I prefer this crazy gerrymandering stuff not to happen? Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, this is Trump and the Republicans in 2025, people. They are doing mm-hmm. what I would consider illegal acts, but they're doing it. And it's...
Right.
probably going to happen, so we need to match energy with energy.
Right, and like, if they want to play by the rules without really playing by the rules, then like, maybe that's the new status quo. And like, I don't know how I feel about that, but I do know that Newsom gerrymandering California with permission from his constituents
right.
is entirely different
totally
than him just deciding he was going to do it without the Texas thing, without the ballot initiative.
Right.
That is entirely different.
Where Abbott in Texas and the Republicans yes. there are beholden to Trump. Like,
right.
if they don't find those 5 seats like he's demanding, they're in trouble with the boss.
Yeah, and like, but that's what I mean, is that we can either let Texas do this and let them win the House in 26 mm-hmm. before any single ballot is cast. Or we can at least try
mm-hmm.
and try the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. Time will surely tell with this. And, you know, I'm sure we will be hearing what happens in the courts
mm-hmm.
after decisions are made here. So it'll be interesting.
I mean, and the really like significant part about this is that California has an independent redistricting commission.
Yeah.
And what that means is that neither party picks their districts.
Right.
They pick independents, people who are unaffiliated, and they draw the maps.
So just that, like Montana.
Right.
We have an independent redistricting commission that after the 2020 census mm-hmm. met and drew our new map. So everybody right. in the state house and Senate was in a new legislative district this mm-hmm. last session.
And it's so that there isn't a skew one way or the other for like either party.
Right.
Newsom has been really, really vocal about this, is that this is California's plan. For California to completely flip the script the way they are is a sign of times, but also a friendly reminder that Democrats in Congress tried to ban gerrymandering several years back. And would you love to know who killed it? Republicans!
Yeah.
And so now here they are being like, oh, you can't gerrymander back to us! huh? Come on now. And unfortunately, that's not all of the clownery from the Republican Party this week. And it's definitely not the last clownery from Donald Trump.
Tell me about the clownery.
So, over the weekend, President Trump invited Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, to Alaska, which is pretty significant. Usually these kinds of summits, is what they're called, happen in neutral sites, i.e. not in either person's right. country.
It's not often that the president
right.
of the United States meets with the dictator of Russia.
Yeah.
Or should I say the dictator of the United States meets with the dictator of
there
Russia.
You go. Now we're getting into it. But so Putin flies into Russia and Trump, no kidding, literally rolls out the red carpet. Red carpet on the tarmac. But if you do want to giggle, there's a really funny video of Trump walking down the red carpet and it's sped up and he is literally zigzagging all over the place because he can't walk in a straight line.
Oh.
Which is a little concerning huh. for the crowd who was like, Joe Biden is too old to be the president.
Right.
But that's neither here nor there. The other significant thing about when Putin actually showed up to Alaska was so they meet, they chat, they do the press thing, and then they both get in the same car. And there is literally no universe where the president does not get into the presidential limo after an event like that. Secret Service would never allow it. So Trump is supposed to go in the presidential limo. Putin is supposed to go in another car behind him. Not this time. They both sat in the back of the presidential limo together, which is insane from an intelligence point of view.
That just doesn't happen.
No. All of this is hypothetical, of course, but like, who's to say he doesn't like have a bug in his pocket that he just tosses under the back seat? Tosses under the front seat. Or like whatever high-tech spy gear there is. I don't know.
Sure.
But you don't let hostile heads of state into quote-unquote sacred
yeah.
places like that. Right. Like those are like Air Force One is another mm-hmm. one that's like that. But the thing that makes it all that much worse is that before becoming the leader of Russia, Putin was a KGB agent.
Yeah.
For like 16 years.
Yeah, can you tell folks what that means?
It's one of the... So it's an intelligence agency mm-hmm. in Russia, but it's...
During the Soviet Union.
And he was pretty high up for like 16 years. So not only is he a hostile head of state, but he also has 16 years of foreign spy experience behind him.
Sure.
And that's the guy.
So he's not an idiot.
No.
But the United States president is, so.
So he
put them in a car together. Yep.
And this is how Putin has found himself in the back of the limo.
Sure.
The whole summit seemed to be more of a show than anything to me. Yeah. They didn't really land on anything. Nothing really happened.
They haven't been transparent.
No,
about
it's
what
all
they talked about.
Maybe this, maybe that, maybe not. But in another awesome security breach by the Trump administration while they were in Alaska, whatever hotel they were staying at, Trump's staff printed things out in the hotel and then left them on the printer in the hotel. And these are like itineraries. Like, these are times, places, locations, dates, like where Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, and all of their staff are going to be. Like, literally all of the information you could ever need.
That's a little worse than a teenager leaving his porn up on his laptop and his mom seeing it.
Yeah, it's that kind of stupid.
Very stupid.
I just, oh my God.
But you can't make this shit up.
But, and the little cherry on top is that in these papers, it also had their lunch menu and what they were going to have for lunch for that day. Lunch. I am emphasizing lunch on purpose because they had filet mignon and creme brulee. So we flew him all the way over here from Russia, welcomed him into the U.S., welcomed him into the limo, fed him the nicest food possible, and got nothing done.
Nothing done. Yeah. It's mind-blowing how Donald Trump has treated this man over the years. Like, he is not our friend. Never has been. But he's got the president wrapped around his finger.
Yeah.
It makes my blood boil just knowing, like, Russia invaded a sovereign country, Ukraine, in the 20th century. Like, this type of stuff just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, anymore. But it is. It actually is. And it has for 3 years now. And the people of Ukraine, I mean, thousands of people have died. Because Putin is trying to attempt an illegal land grab.
Right.
I mean, this is the imperialism that used to happen prior to the 1900s. And now it is happening, you know, before our eyes.
And then you have the president being like, well, Zelensky can stop this war at any time. That's like looking at a murder victim and being like, you should just ask to stop getting stabbed.
No.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it works. No.
But so Zelensky is in D.C. today, Monday, and they are attempting to continue negotiations around the Russia-Ukraine war and attempting to negotiate some kind of a ceasefire. No clue what that's going to actually shake out as. Because they say one thing 1 week, and then it's different the next day.
Yeah.
And then we're back to that. And then we're just never going to know what the answer to this is until we have an answer, really. But so Zelensky sat with Trump in the Oval Office this afternoon and took questions from the press. And if we recall, last time the two of them did an interview together in the Oval Office.
They ambushed him.
That's right. It did not go well.
I know so many people that were so embarrassed to be an American that day.
And if anyone's forgotten, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and the press essentially cornered President Zelensky of Ukraine and shamed him for not wearing a suit to meet with the president. And he said, you guys, my country's at war. People are dying. People are starving. And you want me to go purchase some fancy suit?
And they
to like, stroke your own ego?
Shamed him for not thanking them enough. Yeah. And it was ridiculous.
Yeah. And so I tuned in for it live this time because I was like, oh boy. And relatively nothing of note. Same, oh, well, maybe. Well, if whole lots of things that don't really mean anything. But the main takeaway I had from the interview was a reporter had asked Zelensky if he planned to return to elections once the war was over. And for some background, President Zelensky canceled Ukrainian elections or postpone them or whatever the correct terminology is.
Because he's literally at war.
Yeah, because they're literally being bombed.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's standing in line.
They cannot actually put on an
election. Yeah, they don't have the infrastructure to conduct a national election.
Yeah.
And so, like, they're currently on pause, and so it's become this, like, right-wing talking point that, like, Ukraine's not a democracy, and therefore, like, we should stop helping them, and yada, 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 yada. And so Zelensky responds to the question, and he's like, well, of course, we're just at war right now, in case you missed it. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump looks at him. He goes, oh! And then he kind of turns to the press, and he goes, so you're saying that in, like, if in, like, 3.5 years we were to, like, be at war, no more elections?
What a fool.
I like that.
What a fool. That's just the type of bullshit he does. Like, he'll...
and it almost feels like a veiled threat. Like, oh, so you got away with saying you're still a democracy after you postponed elections because you're at war.
Yeah. Well, we should take Donald Trump at his word, you know, when he says crazy things like that. We should believe him.
It wouldn't shock me if he sends us into a war a month before 28 and is like, ah, darn, sorry guys, you're stuck with me indefinitely. And so, all of this to say, voting laws and rights and all of those things are changing all the time. All the time. On the federal level, on the state level. And so, if you don't have, like, a plan A, plan B, plan C to vote in 2026 in these midterm elections, you need to start making them.
Yeah.
Because there's a very real chance that we get to election day next year, and plan A is not an option because something's illegal, and plan B is not an option because something's illegal. And so plan C is the only option.
Yeah, it's always important to have your info up to date, make sure you registered at your current address, those kind of things. And I know a lot of people listening may think, like, we're hysterical, and, you know, politicos always talk about this type of election suppression, but the reason we do is because it's real, it's happening in real time. Just turn on the TV, and that will be the news story that's on your television, guaranteed. So...
the Truth Social post from Donald Trump will go up on our Instagram tonight. Mm-hmm. So if you need to see the post for yourself to believe us, it's right there.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the final portion of our show. The part where we talk about something positive and less depressing.
Maybe a smile, a giggle.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me something funny, Georgie. What did you do this weekend?
I attempted to take my cat camping.
Cat camping.
My cat camping. And I shouldn't say attempted, because I was successful. My cat does not do well being alone whatsoever. And so it's really annoying to have to try to find someone to go feed him every weekend because we want to go fish or camp or go wherever. And so my parents went up to Georgetown Lake for the week. It's their little summer vacation. They take a week somewhere in Montana every summer and just camp. And it's awesome. And so we went up there and joined them for the weekend, but they have a trailer. And so I was like, Mom, can we please bring the cat and, like, maybe potentially use the trailer sometimes to, like, get him used to everything? And they're like, yeah, sure, no problem. Do whatever you want to do. And I was like, great. So we got him his little harness. We got him a leash. My parents have, like a pop-up kennel, like an outdoor kennel, for their dogs, so we put him in that for a while. He hung out in the trailer for a while. He did not escape. He did not slip his harness and, like, run into the woods. Nice. which was my fear all weekend long.
Okay.
He slept in the tent, no problem. The only problem he had was my parents' puppy. Sure. Which he smacked around a good bit. but if that's the downside, I'll take it.
Great.
So hopefully I have a camping cat now. I don't know how he feels about this.
It was a success. A camping cat.
Camping cat.
I wish we could do that with our cat. I don't think Sasha would be really into leaving our living room.
Oh, Leonard wasn't either. We just kind of forced him to.
Okay. Well, good job, Leonard.
What'd you do?
My mom's been visiting the last few days. Yeah, yeah. So I'm from Culbertson over in northeastern Montana, and I live in Missoula now. And my mom is a quilter.
Okay.
Out there. She runs a little quilting shop out of my former basement bedroom. Oh, yeah, she made
like
this.
Like this quilt?
She made that. Yeah, this wall hanging. Yeah. Anyway, she's got this long arm quilting machine that spans the length of the room. And
oh,
that's
my goodness.
What she does the quilting on. And the machine has been having issues recently. Mm-hmm. So she took it to her quilting machine maintenance guy who works in Helena.
Nice.
I guess. So she drove across the state, dropped it off in Helena, and then is now staying with me until it's fixed. So hanging out with mom.
I mean, she might as well come see if she's going to drive all the way over here.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's good, though.
Sure.
That's awesome.
It's a long track. It's actually closer to drive to Seattle or Portland from Missoula than to go from Missoula to Culbertson.
So it's going
to
be, what, 9 hours to Culbertson?
About 9 hours, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that one on my mom when she's like, you move so far away. I'm like, I'm 2.5 hours. It could be 9.
Right. It could be 9.
You could have to drive across literally every square mile of the state to come see me. Anything else for the people?
I think that's about it. Yeah. I hope people are enjoying the rest of their beautiful Montana summer. And
yeah, it's ending so fast.
Yeah, back to school pretty soon.
Yep. Well, go get your school supplies and make sure you got plan A, B, and C to vote next year. We'll see you next week.